Sai Ram, and welcome to all our listeners to today's afternoon satsang. This is the Thursday coming before a very, very special, solemn, insightful and very significant day in the lives of everyone who reveres, loves and are devoted to Bhagwan Sri Sathya Sai Baba. It is the 23rd of April, a day before the Aradhana Divas, the Aradhana Mahotsavam as it is called, the grand celebration of Aradhana Day. So both of us thought that it would be good to take a little break from our conversations with Bhagwan Sri Sathya Sai Baba, that book, so that we can delve a little bit based on the importance and significance of this Aradhana Day. I still remember, Prem, the first Aradhana Day, the Aradhana Mahotsavam Day, 2012. I was actually very, very low at that point in time, physically and mentally and psychologically, because Swami was not there. And I was really wondering, what is this Aradhana Mahotsavam all about? Because it definitely doesn't look like a day for celebration. But then there was a beautiful experience. And dear listeners, today we will share some of those experiences and thoughts and many such incidences which show and reaffirm to us that even if Swami wishes to, He cannot go away from us. He is with us always. He is in us. He is around us, above us, below us, as He has Himself emphatically stated multiple times in multiple discourses. So that is going to be the theme and subject of today's discussion. And we are also very, very happy, thrilled, and at the same time feeling a kind of comfort, because just reliving and listening to these incidents reinforces and strengthen the faith in our hearts. So with that, we would like to offer our humble pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet, and let's all welcome Brother Prem. Sai Ram Prem.
Sai Ram Arvind, and Sai Ram to all our listeners. Very true. This is, of course, a very, very important event in all our lives, and it's definitely not very far away that we can completely forget the memory of the event itself. But as we always feel when you ruminate over it, you know, it's not something that you could have ever avoided in that sense. And not only because that's how the world works, as Swami would say, everyone who adorns a human body will have to discard it one day. Not only in that sense, but even in the sense of this journey that we have undertaken with Swami, towards Swami, I think that is an essential event that would have happened. In fact, you see that in the lives of many devotees. At some point, Swami would say that, you know, now you have to look beyond the physical. So I think even in that sense, our spiritual journey mandated an event like that. But even as you were saying, that this is one thing that Swami cannot do, right? Reminded of a very sweet and beautiful incident, which was narrated by one of the senior devotees. He was saying that he was sitting in the portico, and that was the day when Swami was very upset with a particular devotee. I think he was a professor in a university. Mm-hmm. Swami had told him something, and he had done a mistake once. I don't know exactly what it is. Nothing was described in this talk that I heard, and I think it's irrelevant also. Something he had done, Swami said, you shouldn't do it like that. And in the portico, one day Swami blasted him, and Swami said, don't do this again. I'm very upset if you do this. And it so happened that this person repeated the same mistake. And that is when Swami, quote unquote, lost it. Swami was livid. One day Swami came out, and this happened, I think, in that space between the bhajan hall door and Swami's interview room door. Mm-hmm. This devotee was also a professor, was sitting there. Swami came out, and Swami was so angry. He said that if Swami looked away a few seconds, we all sitting in the portico would have got up and ran away. That's how angry Swami was. Even though, you know, we were no way related to what was happening there, nobody had the guts to stand there and face Swami when he was so angry. That's how angry Swami was. And Swami was blasting him. And in the middle of that, Swami suddenly looked at him, and Swami said, get up and get out. Very loudly. And Swami said, get up right now and get out. And this devotee was, you know, trying to pray to Swami. And Swami said, no, don't even try to patch up, or don't even try to explain yourself. Right now, get up and get lost. And he said, never again show you my... And Swami said all of this in English. Swami said, don't show your face to me again. Okay. So this devotee got up. He fell on his knees and he was saying, Swami, just one thing. I just want to ask you one thing. Swami said, no, I'm not going to forgive you. Mm. And literally Swami took two steps behind because Swami said he didn't even want him to touch his feet. Mm. That's how upset Swami was. Swami said, what is it? He said, Swami, just one thing, Swami, just, you know, I know I've done this mistake. I completely deserve your, you know, whatever you're telling me now and whatever you're doing to me now. But just one thing, Swami, can you please show me that one place where if I go, you will not be able to see my face? Okay, and he said this, and the people who were sitting there literally saw that Swami's temper cooled instantly. The moment he said this, Swami's face changed. Swami's, you know, he was breathing heavily and all those symptoms that goes with somebody who has lost his temper. Everything changed. And then Swami looked at the people around and Swami said, see, this probably would have been the worst moment of his life. This was the moment when, you know, somebody who has left his career, who has brought all his family, settled in Parthi. And Swami telling somebody at that moment to get out, never show your face to me again, is probably the worst thing that was going to happen to that person in his life at that moment. Swami said, even at such critical moment, he did not forget who Swami is. And he said, you know, that is how your devotion should be. That whatever be the situation, you could be in the worst situation, you could be in the, you know, deepest of oceans, or you could be about to falling off a cliff. But if you remember who Swami is, whose name you're calling out, Swami said, Swami will always be there to protect you. Nothing wrong will ever happen to you. And that if anybody asks this question, is there anything that Satya Sai Baba cannot do? He cannot let go of his devotees. I think that's one thing that he can never do.
You know, lucky are those people who are able to remember this in such situations, because it often happens that when situations like these arise, we just forget it. And we also, the moment we descend into despair, the moment we descend into sorrow or depression, that in itself is an indication that we have forgotten who Swami is. And Swami's love is such that for such people, Swami is ready to give reminders, possibly even repeated reminders. In fact, as I started off today's satsang, I was telling about how the first ever Aradhana Mahotsavam, I was feeling very low and sad. It was a kind of dejection, and I was wondering what on earth could be the logic in naming this day as a Mahotsavam, you know, a grand festival. But I still remember that was the day for the first time ever in my life I had an experience which repeated after that multiple times, but till then I had never had that experience. It is so surreal and amazing. With downcast faces, everybody, me, my mother, my father, my wife, four of us, we had gone to the mandir, we attended the proceedings. There was a talk by some figurehead in India, I remember. And after all that, when we came back home, we were simply thrilled and stunned for the first time ever to witness one Leela of Bhagawan, which is the manifestation of Vibhuti from his photographs. Till that day, I had heard of Vibhuti manifesting from photographs. I had even seen Vibhuti manifest in photographs in a few homes, but I had never personally experienced it. And to have that experience, it was so thrilling. You know, I got goose flesh because not just in one photograph in my parents' bedroom, one photograph in our altar, one photograph in our bedroom. Everywhere there was Vibhuti, 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 and it was so thrilling. And I felt such a joy surging in my heart, and I felt that was Swami's way of responding to my question as to, Swami, why is this a Mahotsavam? What is there to be happy about? It was almost as if Swami was saying, you said there's nothing to be happy about, why are you feeling so happy in your heart? And that day in my heart, you know, from within I felt the message that Swami was giving is, celebrate this day as a festival because remember this is the day when I have become very close to you. I felt that was the day Swami moved from the Yajur Mandir to the Hriday Mandir, as they say, to the altar of our hearts. And I felt this was the message, this is the message of the Aradhana Mahotsavam. And every time, every year this Aradhana Mahotsavam comes, my mind goes back to that first ever Aradhana Mahotsavam, the 24th of April 2012, when this magnificent thing happened. And I feel that is why every Aradhana Mahotsavam we should remember. We should remember, as you rightly said, we should remember who Swami is. We should remember that the destruction of the body made of five elements does not signify the end of Swami, because the emergence of the body made of five elements did not signify the beginning of Swami. Swami is Adi and Anant. He is beyond. He is limitless. He is infinite. And as our topic today says, he is just a call away. One call, that's all. And he will be there. And that, dear listeners, is what I feel is the magic of the Aradhana Mahotsavam. It's a reminder that let us not forget who Swami is. Let us not forget that he is in our heart right now, listening, feeling and experiencing everything that we are listening to, speaking, and we are experiencing. And with that, I think we will proceed with some more such instances which remind us of who Swami is.
Right. The point is that I recall this beautiful incident, and I'm sure we must have narrated this before. It was in Thrai Vrindavan when Swami would ask some of the students to speak. And I'm not sure, it must have been during the vacation time. Mm-hmm. So a lot of students would go home and they would come back, or Swami would go to Kodaikanal and Swami would come back and be in Vrindavan. It was one of those occasions when Swami called one of the senior students and Swami asked him to speak. And he started narrating of experiences that he would have when he would go home during the vacation, right? Because when your students, those 3 years, 5 years, or however is the duration, there would always be that period when we are physically away from Swami. So he started narrating those experiences where he felt Swami's presence when he was away from Swami during the vacation, and many such episodes. And it was close to the time when the students from the Prashantinilam campus would return to Parthi after the vacations. So this boy was from the Prashantinilam campus. He was one of the postgraduate students. So after his talk, Swami was very happy. Swami blessed him. And he was sitting just next to Swami, and Swami was talking to him. And in the course of that conversation, he said, "Swami, please come to Parthi soon, because we are leaving tomorrow or day after, and Swami should come soon to Parthi." And Swami said, "Hey, just now you were telling Swami is everywhere, and you were telling about how you felt Swami in your hometown and all of that." Swami said, "Abhi kya hua?" And Swami said, "See, this is only no unity of thought, word and deed, full hypocrisy." And Swami started telling, "You know, you're like this, you tell like that, you don't believe in what you say and all that." This boy was quiet for some time. And after some time, Swami said, "Bolo, why do you say like that? Why do you say like this and all that?" And this boy just made one statement, which, you know, literally silenced Swami. He said, "Swami, your presence is sweeter than your omnipresence." Okay. And Swami didn't have anything to say after that. You know, it doesn't happen every day that you win an argument with Swami. Swami just kept quiet. And everybody felt like that's exactly the, you know, what we wanted to tell Swami and we couldn't convey to Swami. When I reflect upon this, I think that people don't realize how sweet Swami's omnipresence also is. Right? When you are in Swami's physical presence, it's so sweet that, you know, sometimes that sweetness makes you feel that everything else is insipid. It's not as sweet as this could be. But the thing is, I think every devotee has felt that joy of even that first darshan, or first time when Swami came and spoke to you. Or, you know, you might have had multiple darshans, but there's one first darshan when you would have connected to Swami. That joy, I think, when you were narrating about that first Aradhana Mahotsavam, that reconnection, or that when Swami re-enters your life or comes in a different form and reassures you, I think that moment is as sweet as the moment when you physically connected to Swami.
Absolutely, because, you know, I feel like you said, presence is sweeter than omnipresence. In that moment when Swami does that connect, I feel the omnipresence concretizes into a presence. You literally feel him. It has to be experienced to be felt, but the joy that you feel, the thrill that you feel, the gratitude, the awe, all of that is exactly as it is in his physical presence. So I definitely agree with that student that the presence is so much more sweeter than the omnipresence. And when we say that we should call out to Swami, It is calling out to the omnipresent Swami. For example, right now Swami is here with us in this room. He is here. He is here as the omnipresent. But when we yearn and want, and when we say that Swami, our senses, our eyes, our nose, our skin, our mind is unable to comprehend you, though intellectually I know you are omnipresent. With that yearning when we pray, I feel that omnipresence concretizes itself into a presence. And it's so, see, let me tell you one more incident. Because, you know, after that day, after that 24th of April 2012, so many times, so many occasions, Vibhuti manifested at home. For a couple of years maybe. Now it has again stopped off. I have no reason. I don't know how, but yeah, for some, there was a period in time when it was so beautiful and Vibhuti would keep manifesting. You know, I must say that even with physical Swami, see, often we remember the first darshan that we had. And we say, oh God, how it was. Swami's eye, Swami this, and it's memorable. But after that, we have had 200 darshans. If I ask you what was the 165th darshan, I have no idea at all. Because all said and done, when the omnipresence concretizes into a presence, because it is being taken in through the senses, there is a kind of saturation that happens to the senses. Just like the first morsel of food on a hungry stomach is very tasty, same thing after your stomach is filled doesn't taste so good. So also, you know, with these Vibhuti manifestations also, with my personal experience, I'm saying that when it first manifests, it's such a thrill. After that, it becomes something like, okay, you're happy, but that thrill, that excitement is not there. Vibhuti came because now you got used to it. But you know, there used to be those times when there would be when you really intensely cry and pray and ask, and something magical would happen even in the normal. I'll give one small example. Like, it was the 2013 Shankranti time, January 14th. And Shankranti is a festival that is special for many parts of India, and being from the state of Karnataka, it is very special for us. We have different kinds of sweets on that day. So that day when I was in the mandir, I got a call from my father who said that, Arvind, Vibhuti has manifested in the altar today.
Mm-hmm.
And by now, as I said, multiple times Vibhuti had manifested, so we had come up with a kind of a standard operating procedure. The standard operating procedure is, as soon as anybody notices Vibhuti, tell everybody else in the family, immediately take photographs of that manifestation, and wait for a day before clearing the Vibhuti. Clear the Vibhuti because if fresh showers have to come, it has to make place for it. You didn't want to mix up, like mixing up dishes. And leave it for a day so that everybody gets to feel the completion of blessings from it. So when my father said this, I felt very happy. I said, I'll come back from Mandir and I'll see it. He said, you know what? He and Pooja, that's my wife, they said that we have tasted it and it is sweet. So I felt, oh wow, great. I was having that anticipative excitement. As soon as the Mandir got over, I went back home and rushed to the altar. And to my utter dismay, there was no Vibhuti at all. I was trying to search where it is. I said, Dad, where did you say the Vibhuti is? He said, near that silver Ganesha, you see there. Nothing near that silver Ganesha. And I said, Dad, did you clear it up? Then he came. He said, no, I didn't clear. Then I asked my wife, did you clear? She said, no, I didn't clear. And I was like, what happened then? Then he showed me in the camera. He showed the proof. He has taken a photograph when the Vibhuti is there. So I'm seeing that and I was very dismayed. But my father, you know, I really feel my father is a genuine devotee. He said, wow, look at the Leela of the Lord. I said, what is the Leela of the Lord? He said, this is Leela, Vibhuti vanishing. Just like appearance of Vibhuti is a Leela, disappearance of the Leela. In my mind, I said, I don't like this Leela. I don't want this. I felt very bad because this was another first. As I said, it was the first time sweet Vibhuti, sugary Vibhuti was coming. I had come and they said that it was sweet and now I'm not having. So I went into the altar and I said, Swami, this is not fair. This is, see, every day or whatever, you're giving Vibhuti, but this was special Vibhuti and taking it away before I could have it, and this is unfair. I kept cribbing and crying and crying, and every half an hour I would peep into the altar to see if Swami's heart has melted and he has sent some Vibhuti. Nothing happened. The whole evening passed. Night 10:30 or something, last before going to bed, again I checked, nothing happened. Next day morning, again, kept checking, nothing happened. Finally, after breakfast, everything, I had my shave and I had to just leave for work. I just went and peeped, and again to my utter amazement, exactly near that silver, little silver idol of Ganesha, there was a heap of vibhuti. First thing is I just took a pinch and put it in my mouth. It was sweet. It also had a kind of elaichi flavoring. Elaichi, elaichi is an English word. It's a
cardamom, right?
Maybe.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, cardamom, okay. Right. So it had that flavoring. And I was so thrilled. I immediately called out. I followed the standard operating procedure. I took my mobile phone, took a photograph, called my dad and my wife. My mother had gone to duty to the mandir. She was doing the duty in mandir, so she had gone. So they both came and they were both so thrilled. And my dad is saying, let's take a little of that, keep in a paper and keep it in the locker, because again, if it disappears, your mother will not get to taste it. And I was thinking, if Swami can make it disappear from here, he can make it disappear even from the cupboard there.
Right.
So what I'm trying to say is, you know, sometimes I have been surprised at how Swami responds. Like, I often think that, you know, if I pray for somebody who is sick, maybe Swami will consider responding because he's sick. But if I say, Swami, I feel like eating a waffle ice cream cone, he may not respond because, after all, come on, that's like a childish desire. But it, nothing is there like that. Once it comes from the heart, I think anything Swami responds to, and it's not like every time he'll respond to everything, but that actually makes us careful about what we should ask from Swami, because you have no idea how he responds, and sometimes his response is so fast and so unexpected. When it is so fast and so unexpected, only we consider it like a miracle and share it possibly. Now when I look back, all of this is in order to create sweetness in our life, because see, if that vibhuti had not vanished, possibly I would not have recalled or recollected this episode with so much of intensity and, you know, kind of joy. But because of that, that momentary sorrow that came there, that thing that happened where I was not given what I felt is my due, that has added so much of sweetness, and it's an episode that I've remembered and shared it many times. Oftentimes in life also this happens, that I feel that something that is due to me, supposed to come to me, it was taken away. And Swami leaving his physical frame at the age of 86 is one strong complaint that many people feel, that, hey, we were supposed to get it, man. I just got to know Swami now and I was supposed to have darshan. Or some people say, I have not yet had darshan. It feels like that sweet vibhuti which was snatched away before I could get what was due. But in my heart, I'm convinced that that will never happen with Swami. Swami will give us. And if we feel that something has been snatched away which was due, we can rest assured that Swami has done that only to give us something much more sweeter, much more beautiful, much more reinforcing. And that is the faith I think we should hold on to, especially in times when we are feeling low and sad.
Very true. And I think that is going to be the sum and substance of what we're going to speak. Because when we say that, you know, I came and Swami is not here, that is definitely only in our perception. The bottom line is, I want and he is there. And that will never change. I think even on 2011, when we were going through the whole episode, I think that is what, that was the conviction that, you know, stood out in spite of all the pain and everything is, that's one side. But the thing is, Swami is always there. The fact is, you have to call and he's always there. And I don't know the exact episode. I think it was V.K. Narasimhan who speaks about, you know, he is traveling in some country in Germany or somewhere. Swami sends him to participate in some event.
Italy World Conference.
World Conference, right? He forgets his spectacles. Right? The World Conference in Rome, when he forgets his spectacles back home in Puttaparthi, and, you know, he prays for it and he finds Swami, you know, it drops, you know, from the ceiling in his hotel room, right? So where is the Swami not that you call and he doesn't reach? You know, it just reminds you of that beautiful Chinnakatha which Swami would say. We all know the story of Gajendra Moksham. It's a very interesting thing. You know, many, many times I've seen this being narrated in Swami's presence during the Bhagavata Saptaham when they had this Kavi Sammelan. It's a very simple episode. You know, we all know the episode. There is the story of the elephant which is grabbed by this crocodile when it goes to drink water in a pool. And then the elephant calls out to Lord Vishnu, and Lord Vishnu comes and saves that elephant. I mean, even among the many stories we read in the Bhagavatam, this seems to be a little, unremarkable episode. Mm. But there's so much of importance to it. There must be some backstory to it, that Gajendra must be some great devotee Because Swami would relish the retelling of this episode so much. Even Potana, when he writes as Bhagavatam, he gives a lot of emphasis to this episode, the way it is written, even Bhagavatam. And the Chinnakatha, which I am referring to, is once this entire Bhagavatam, this episode was being narrated in a royal court in front of a king. And at the end of it, the king asks a question to all his learned ministers and the scholars in his court. He said, this elephant called out and Vishnu heard it. And he was in Vaikuntha, and the story says that from Vaikuntha he comes running down to save. So how far is this Vaikuntha that a call of an elephant could be heard there? You know, what should be the distance in kilometers or whatever it is? And everybody is stupefied. Nobody knows the answer to this. And this is the king. You know, you can't afford to give him a wrong answer. And everybody is blinking. What is the answer? And the story goes that the servant who is standing behind the king and who is fanning the king, he says, Master, if you don't mind, can I, venture into answering that? And he says, oh, all these learned ministers and scholars can't answer, then you think you can answer? Okay, give me an answer, let's see. And the simple answer he gives is, Vaikuntha should be just a call away. Because when he called, he came.
It's as far as an elephant.
As far as an elephant's voice can or call can reach. And Swami would say, that is the right answer. How far is God? Wherever you are, He is only a call away. Right? And we have seen this so many times. You know, when we say call, it is not even, if somebody says, you know, my voice is very soft. It doesn't even matter that way. You know, and when Sai Prakash, one of our colleagues, he tells this very, very sweet incident. Right? Once when he was sitting for darshan, Swami was walking around in what we refer to as third block. If any students are there who are listening, they'll know what the third block is. It's just the block right in front of the portico where Swami would come and sit. So Swami was walking around there, and I think Swami was distributing something or busy with something like that. And, you know, as students, there would be, as you're saying, if you come and ask somebody what was your 165th darshan, you won't know. But there would be some days when you find a connect with Swami, some days when you are, you know, overwhelmed with devotion and love for Swami. So Sai Prakash was saying that to some one particular day like that, he was like, you know, Swami was in front of him, but not talking to him, talking to somebody else. But a surge of love, and he said, Swami, if you really love me, if you really love that the way I believe that you love me, right now you should turn and you should say, I'm a good boy. Right? Imagine a few hundred students sitting there, and here is a boy who's thinking. He's not even calling out. And he said this thought kind of occurs in his mind. Wherever Swami is a few feet away, Swami turns back and said, Intima? He said, did you say something?
Oh.
And he literally, you know, he skipped a heart. I mean, skipped a beat. And he said, this is just the thought. And Swami's turning, and as though if you just call out Swami, and Swami says, what did you call? Did you say something? So literally Swami turned like that, and he said, Intima? In the next couple of seconds, Swami walked towards where he was sitting. And out of the blue, you know, randomly, Swami started speaking something, and Swami said, you know, his father came to me when he was in college, and he's from this place. He and his brother came to me when they're... Something Swami said, and Swami just looked at him, and Swami patted him. Good boy. And when you say he's a call away, he's a call, I mean, that call does not even have to be in decibels, right? And that doesn't depend whether it is pre-2000 level, post-2000 level, 11, and whether you're in this country, that country, what is the situation in you are in, it really doesn't matter at all.
Absolutely. And that's why I feel, you know, when Swami says there's a Navavidha Bhakti Marga, there are 9 ways in which a devotee can move towards God. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam, Sevanam, Vandanam. I feel Swami is also describing the ways in which God seeks the devotee. When we say that you call out, Shravanam is you listen to the glories of the Lord. The Lord is also waiting to listen to the devotee. Whoever calls, I'm just a call away. We say, Kirtanam, sing the glories of the Lord. How many times have we not seen Swami singing the glory of His devotees? Swami would speak about Mirabai, Swami would speak about Tyagaraja, Swami would speak not just historical devotees. He has spoken about people who have served Him here, in this physical frame. Spoken about them to great extent and great detail. Swami is thinking of the devotees so much. I mean, singing their glory so much. when we say Smaranam, we think of Swami, Swami thinks of us. I remember on one occasion, you know, Professor G.V., our first director, he had sent us, that is, Brother Sai Prakash, myself, and three of us, we had to go to different reservoirs and tanks that Swami had built as part of the Anandpur Water Project, and we wanted to document it.
Okay.
So we went, and at one point in time, we began to speak about Swami, and then about our director, that is G.V. sir, different things, and for about 1 hour in the car, we were discussing about Swami and G.V. sir. Swami and G.V. sir, you know. And we even said to each other that, you know, I think today G.V. sir and Swami might be getting hiccups because this much we are talking about them. Okay. That day when we landed was late in the evening, and usually G.V. sir would have retired by then. But he was very eager that he wanted to meet Brother Sai Prakash. And when Sai Prakash went and came back, we were very thrilled. He said that today, for some strange reason, during dinner, Swami kept speaking to him only about boys and Radio Sai only. And you know, for us, it was so thrilling. We said, hey, look here, we are talking about G.V. sir and Swami, and Swami and G.V. sir are talking about us. It's so beautiful, but it also, you know, I felt, see, for example, the Bhagavad Gita was given to Arjuna. It is not Arjuna's private property. It's not for him. Anybody who gets inspired or follows Bhagavad Gita, it works for them also. I feel like that only. Swami has created millions of Arjunas. So many experiences given to different people. The experience might be personal, but the message in that experience is universal. And that day I felt that is what it is. You think of me, I think of you.
Yeah, in fact, Swami says that, you know, even as you're narrating that, we've heard this from Swami, would say this in his discourses. Every time that you think of me, I'm thinking of you. Right. Apparently, when Swami had said this in a discourse, one of the students who was in the bhajan group then, he said, you know, so I should test this out. You know, does really Swami think of us when we are thinking of him? So again, I think it was again in Thrai Vrindavan, and that day Swami was giving a discourse, and suddenly this thought occurred to him. He said, if I test this now, see, when you're giving a talk, you know, we all have had that experience. You have to give in all your attention. No, recently when I was in a satsang with somebody, I said, you know, 1 hour I've spoken about Swami. I've forgotten about what is the statistics, what is happening, you know, what is the emergency going on. And are we, because that, it absorbs your mind completely, you know, that 1 hour when you stand in front of an audience and speak. So this boy was saying, Swami, you're giving a talk now. If I think of you now, right, and I want it, I want proof, right? I mean, even when you're thinking of Swami, you're already thinking of Swami, if you have to put it that way. But he said, I want a proof now that I'm thinking of you, that you are also thinking of me. So he said, Swami, I'm thinking of you now. And Swami was speaking about something as random as Omkaram and things like that. Okay, early morning, Brahma Murtam, Omkaram and all that. Suddenly Swami said, you know, that boy's name happened to be Vijay Sai. Swami said, you should listen to our Vijay Sai. He chants Omkaram very nicely. Randomly, right? And this boy just broke down. He said, you know, I mean, what better proof can you have? And random, really randomly. And I think, as you rightly said, why is Swami given these experiences? It does not mean it works for one Vijay Sai. It does not mean that it works for one Sai Prakash or Arvind. This is Swami's promise. When you think of me, I am thinking of you. Right? And who doesn't want Swami to think of you, right? As you many times say in your talks, you know, after a certain point, you're not interested in darshan. You're interested in Swami having your darshan. In the same way, after a certain point, we want Swami to think of us. It's not merely we thinking of Swami. And Swami's word is, whenever you're thinking of me, believe it, I'm thinking of you.
On that note, dear listeners, we will take a quick little break. On the other side of the break, we will continue with this discussion.
शांत ब्रह्ममया दिव्य स्वरूपा युगावतारा परमदया घन जनावना ಅಂತರಂಗ ಸಾಯಿ ಅನಾಥನಾಥ ಸಾಯಿ
ಅಂತರಂಗ ಸಾಯಿ ಅನಾಥನಾಥ ಸಾಯಿ
ಅಂತರಂಗ ಸಾಯಿ ಅನಾಥನಾಥ ಸಾಯಿ
ಅಂತರಂಗ ಸಾಯಿ ಅನಾಥನಾಥ ಸಾಯಿ
ದೀನ ಬಂಧು ಸಾಯಿ ಕರುಣ ಸಿಂಧು ಸಾಯಿ ಸಿಂಧು ಸಾಯಿ ಅಂತರಂಗ ಸಾಯಿ ಅನಾಥನಾಥ ಸಾಯಿ
ಅಂತರಂಗ ಸಾಯಿ ಅನಾಥನಾಥ ಸಾಯಿ
ರಾಮಕೃಷ್ಣ ಶಿವ ಶಕ್ತಿ ಪ್ರೇಮ ರೂಪ ಸಾಯಿ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಶಿವ ಶಕ್ತಿ ಪ್ರೇಮ ರೂಪ ಸಾಯಿ ಯುಗಾವತಾರ ಬಾಬಾ ಶ್ರೀ ಸತ್ಯ ಸಾಯಿ ಯುಗಾವತಾರ ಬಾಬಾ ಶ್ರೀ ಸತ್ಯ ಸಾಯಿ ಅಂತರಂಗ ಸಾಯಿ ಅನಾಥನಾಥ ಸಾಯಿ
ಅಂತರಂಗ ಸಾಯಿ ಅನಾಥನಾಥ ಸಾಯಿ
ದೀನ ಬಂಧು ಸಾಯಿ ಕರುಣ ಸಿಂಧು ಸಾಯಿ
ದೀನ ಬಂಧು ಸಾಯಿ
ಅಂತರಂಗ ಸಾಯಿ ಅನಾಥನಾಥ ಸಾಯಿ
ಅಂತರಂಗ
ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಶಿವ ಶಕ್ತಿ ಪ್ರೇಮ ರೂಪ ಸಾಯಿ
ರಾಮಕೃಷ್ಣ ಶಿವ ಶಕ್ತಿ ಪ್ರೇಮ ರೂಪ ಸಾಯಿ
ಯುಗಾವತಾರ ಬಾಬಾ ಶ್ರೀ ಸತ್ಯ ಸಾಯಿ
ಯುಗಾವತಾರ ಬಾಬಾ ಶ್ರೀ ಸತ್ಯ ಸಾಯಿ
ಯುಗಾವತಾರ ಬಾಬಾ ಶ್ರೀ ಸತ್ಯ ಸಾಯಿ ಅಂತರಂಗ ಸಾಯಿ ಅನಾಥನಾಥ ಸಾಯಿ
ವೆಲ್ಕಮ್ ಬ್ಯಾಕ್ ಡಿಯರ್ ಲಿಸ್ಟರ್ಸ್ ವಿ ಆರ್ ಡಿಸ್ಕಸಿಂಗ್ ಅಬೌಟ್ what 24th April meant for all of us, the Aradhana Mahotsavam, and more importantly, what this doesn't change. And I think that is what is of greater importance to all of us, and that's what we're talking about. And we came to the point where we said that unlike anybody else whom we call out to, anybody else whom we depend on, Swami alone is the one who is never far away not to listen to our call. And I think that's what we were talking about.
You know, we discussed different ways in which we feel Swami's presence. Personally, at least, as I said, There's this vibhuti manifestation. Another method is through dreams. But you know, one more method that I'm sure many of us have experienced, yet we might not have been able to recognize it instantly. When somebody asks, how have you felt Swami's grace? We describe via dreams, manifestations, some startling episode. But one thing that I often feel we miss out is we experiencing Swami's love, Swami's compassion and Swami's grace through a devotee who has imbibed the same and, you know, expressing it. I'm reminded of the experience of Brother Amay mm-hmm. Deshpande. He was narrating of one incident where he was totally helpless and caught, and though he did not explicitly pray to Swami, because Swami has become a part of our life, what he experienced, I mean, I'll just go to the incident before giving such an elaborate introduction. See, he had to travel to Abu Dhabi where his parents were, and his flight was from Bangalore, 2009, after that academic year ended. He went to the airport, and his flight was at around 11:30 or 12, midnight almost. Now, while his ticket was being checked, they said that he needs to produce the credit card with which the ticket had been booked.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, I don't have that credit card. Then they said, then you need to get a copy of that at least. He said, I don't have it. Then they told him, then please move to the side, and kept him aside. And he continued checking the other's tickets. At first, Amay thought that, what is this thing? Okay, let me go to another counter. He went to the other counter and same thing happened. And he was surprised, and he first thought they might be joking. It can't be some serious thing. What is it? He said, excuse me, why? I have a valid ticket. Why am I not being allowed to travel? Then he said, sir, because the credit card with which this ticket has been booked, you need to produce it, otherwise we can't allow you.
Mm-hmm.
He said, what is this? And then they took the ticket and showed him that rule there. It was there. And he said, but I don't have that credit card, nor do I have a copy of it. Then they said, but whose credit card is this? Then they told how terrorism had raised its ugly head, and this was one way terrorists operated, where tickets would be booked by somebody else and somebody would travel. So you need to have that card for them to check. He said, this is my father's credit card. They said, if you don't have a copy, can we speak to your father? He said, sure. And he called up. But as I said, it was a 12 o'clock thing. So in Abu Dhabi, it was around way past 10 o'clock at night. And his father had slept. There was no response to the telephone. And he said, I'm not able to contact him. Right before his eyes, an Arab man comes walking. And he produces ticket. And very interestingly, he's also having the same problem, where his ticket has been booked by a credit card and that credit card is not with him.
Mm-hmm.
So they said no. And when Amay saw this happening to an Arab man, he felt, oh my God, these fellows are serious. You know, they're not allowing their own people. But that Arab man pulled out a wad of notes from his pocket, simply booked another ticket and went ahead. He said, okay, give me another ticket. Then I'm booking. And he paid in cash, mm-hmm. booked another ticket and went ahead. And Amay said, oh my God, what do I do now? Then he was thinking, that's it. I'm gone. I'm stuck. I can't go. So I have to return back. But how do I return back? Then he was thinking, the next bus, the earliest bus to Puttaparthi is a 6:30 bus from Bangalore, which was there. So 6:30 means if I leave the airport around 4:30, how do I get to the Bangalore bus stand? What do I do for the next 6-7 hours? He was standing there. And the person at the counter, once he finished checking everybody, he said, sir, please don't stand or be over here. There's nothing you can do. Please leave. That's it. If you don't have it, we can't. We can't allow. He said, no, it's not about that. What do I do after leaving? I don't stay in Bangalore. I have to go to Puttaparthi. How do I go? I'm just wondering. So let me just check out my choices. The minute the word Puttaparthi was told, this person's ears perked up and he said, Puttaparthi, what is that Puttaparthi, that Satya Sai Baba? He said, yes, I'm from Satya Sai Baba. Then he says, to his utmost surprise, that person who was checking tickets told him, Satya Sai Baba means your problem will be solved. Wait. So he's wondering, what is this happening? Again, he thought, is this a joke?
Mm-hmm.
Then the person tells, come in, and takes him straight to the airport manager. And he says that to the airport manager, this person is saying, sir, he is your Satya Sai Baba fellow. So he has got this. And then that person, airport manager, asks him, what happened? He said, sir, I'm like this. And he explained his situation. He says that airport manager said, are you Swami's student? Then he on his mobile phone, he had a profile picture, which was him and Swami in Kodaikanal. He showed it and said, yes, sir, I'm actually from there. The minute he saw that picture, that person began to touch the phone to place it to his eyes. He came around the thing and he embraced Amay. And he said, you don't worry, you sit. You are Swami's student. Oh my God, what a blessing it is. You are Swami's student. And then that person revealed, he said, you know, when Swami went to Kodaikanal, I got a chance to travel with him in the flight because somebody has to do that officially. And I had taken that. And this person, he says, Swami is my Lord. He is this. You don't worry. And then he said, then that person got a printout, filled Amay's name on it, four places put his signature, stamped it and gave it to the person. Then the person said, come, and took Amay along. So Amay was very happy. He exchanged notes with who this person is. And while going along, he said, what is that he has signed? He said, he has signed saying that he is personally liable. He signed a surety for you. So if any question comes from Abu Dhabi or from any authorities, he will be answerable on your behalf. He has signed it. The airport manager, in extraordinary circumstances, has the power vested in him to take such a decision. And he has taken it all because of your Sai Baba. I told you, Sai Baba means don't worry. So, he actually traveled on the ticket and he was saying, I didn't even call out to Swami. But just being associated with Swami, once, you know, Swami has said that, once you have come to me, you may leave me, but I will never leave you. Brother Amay was saying that I was reminded of that. Because at this point in time, usually when we are in trouble, we call out to Swami. He says, I had not even called out to him, yet he reached out to me. And with so much love, I was treated like Swami himself. And I feel this is another aspect that all of us in different ways have experienced. Swami's love flowing to us through another devotee who has imbibed Swami in his heart. So, this is another way I think Swami reaches out to us, and it's an amazing thing when it happens.
Right, and as we've seen many, many times, I think this is even when Swami was physically available. Probably one of the things is if you're lucky, if you get an opportunity to interact with Swami or you have an interview, you might have a physical acknowledgement from Swami. I think that was one thing which sometimes would happen, as we have seen in many cases. I was once listening to a talk by one of our old students. He came to Swami not because his family was devotees. His father just gave him an application, asked him to apply. Nobody in his family was a devotee. And even when he applied, he thought that he's not very serious about it. But in spite of being a good student, he said that somehow he did not get admission anywhere, and this was the only door which was open. You know, literally, it was led towards Swami. So even after coming here, he saw that, you know, so many of them came from devotees' families, came from very, very well-off families, and some of them were very talented, you know, some were very good at music, very good at academics and sports. He said that, I shouldn't be here, right? Mm-hmm. Literally, he felt like there was no way I had to be here. You know, Swami had just brought me here. And he said that almost all through my education, that's how I was. I mean, I was very fond of Swami. I was very attached to Swami and all of that. But I felt like there was nothing. Why should Swami come and speak to me? I'm not a devotee's son. I'm not good at this. I'm not good at that. That sort of a thing. So he says once Swami called him for an interview, probably towards the end of his stay. And in the interview, Swami gave him, I think, watch or something. And Swami told him, I'm not giving you this simply. This is so that you remember that you should watch your words, actions, thoughts, and all of those instructions. And then Swami started recollecting a couple of incidents from his childhood. And he said that at one point, he was emotionally very, very troubled, even as a small kid. I think he came from a very strict household or something. He wanted to... he was coming back from his hostel to home or something, and he decided not to come home. He wanted to run away from home. So he kind of was planning to get off in a station which he was not supposed to get off or something like that. And when he was trying to do that, one elderly person comes and catches him. He says, why are you standing here near the entrance? Makes him, you know, where's your seat? Makes him sit there and sits next to him till he falls asleep. And when he wakes up in the morning, it is the station where he has to get off. Right, and it happens a couple of times when he tries to do something silly, somebody comes and stops him like that. Swami narrates those two incidents, and Swami asks him, "Who do you think stopped you then?" Right, and when he hears that, you know, he says that here I was thinking that I'm accidentally in Swami's presence, And whatever I'm getting is a bonus. Probably, you know, Swami was meaning to give this to somebody else, and I, by default, I'm here and I'm getting it. And if Swami had not told that, he would have never known. Right? It would have been like two episodes that happened, and you know, things. If it had happened a different way, my life would have been different. But then when Swami tells him, how many such episodes have happened in our lives? How do we know? Hmm. Right? That boy was lucky that Swami acknowledged it. And I'm sure if we look back at our life, there would be many, many such instances which we cannot explain, which defined our lives. Right? And I think, as you were saying, sometimes some of these coincidences which happen, when we recognize it, I think we are feeling Swami's presence. But it doesn't mean that Swami was not present or Swami is not present around.
Exactly. Another danger that comes. One thing is, when we don't recognize it, we think that Swami was possibly not there. The other danger that comes is, even when we recognize, we suddenly start feeling a special affinity or attachment to that person. Let us realize that Swami can come to us through devotees, but that doesn't mean that if he comes to us through one particular devotee, that devotee becomes Swami for us. No. I mean, after that, next time you have any problem, you don't go to him and ask, what should I do? What is this? And consider him as Swami. That leads to the other kind of dangers that we are seeing in the world today, where a kind of medium gets created. Yeah, the exclusivity of medium is nonsense. Yes, different devotees have been mediums to Swami's message, knowingly or unknowingly. You know, sometimes Swami comes in somebody's dream and tells you, tell this. Possibly he's a knowing medium. Sometimes it has happened that somebody comes and tells something which makes so much of meaning to the person who is receiving it, but makes no meaning at all to the person sharing it. Once it so happened that in a talk that I was delivering, I went into a small digression and then apologized for the digression, then came back and completed the talk. At the end of the talk, one person came and he was weeping as if like the talk changed his life. And you know which part of the talk had actually, in quotes, changed his life? The digression part. Mm. That actually humbled me to realize that, you know, unwittingly you have become Swami's instrument. And I was grateful for the person for having told me, because it reminded me that even when I am thinking that I am doing this, I am doing that, Swami is guiding every minute of our lives. And the more we remember it, more grateful we will feel. And you know, another experience that I want to say is, many times we think that you have to pray for a long time for a prayer to work. It is not like that. We often think that Swami comes into our life in the last minute. You know, I'm going on trying when everything is gone, then Swami decides to step in. No. Swami is stepping in at a moment that is perfectly right. If He wants, it can happen instantly. One experience that I've had, it really, you know, it has thrilled me. It might appear very small, but you know, there was this person in my life, mm-hmm, who was troubling me a lot in different ways. I will not go into those details. So once it so happened that I went to Swami and I said, Swami, I don't know how this person is in my life. I can't get away because of different reasons. Somehow throw this person out of my life. I don't know how you'll do it, but I don't think it's possible, because in my human mind, when I was thinking of all the logical ways, it just didn't look possible that this person can be out of my life completely, at least. So I was just saying, Swami, I think I'm gone. I don't know which I'm gone. I don't know which sin or which karma I'm paying for. Please, Swami. And I remember shedding tears in the altar. You won't believe it, Prem. Next day I meet this person. And that person has totally changed. Unbelievable. Totally changed. That person's attitude towards me has changed. That person's behavior has changed. Everything has changed. As if it's a new person in that form. I couldn't believe it, you know, because of my previous experience, I was thinking this person is possibly playing a political game, this person is possibly doing something, and it's been so much time since then, that person has remained the same, even though sometimes I think, is this a game that person is playing, but come on, so long if the person is playing the game, it's as good as reality, and it has totally changed since that day, and I was thinking, oh God, Swami, all this while I was trying everything in my repertoire to change the situation. How to make this person get out of my life? How to, you know, get back at this person? All this I've been thinking. Finally giving up, I just sat and prayed, and you did it overnight. See, I think that is also important to remember, because, you know, in the times like this, when we have this corona thing going on, it's often easy to get discouraged, thinking, oh my God, where is this going to end? The numbers don't seem to be coming down. Everybody is infected. No vaccine in sight. No medicine in sight. Nothing. How do you do it? So discouraging. Let us remember that when the time comes, Swami can do it in an instant. Because I saw that happening. What I considered previously impossible happened overnight without any reason, without me having done anything at all. So that was one incident which I think of a lot these days, because we seemingly are in a situation like that where things are very hopeless and there seems to be no solution in sight. And it's not just about corona. Even when we think of Swami physically, we think that it's gone. It's impossible for me to see Swami. It's impossible for me to have His darshan because the body is gone. No. I would beg to differ, because I feel if we sincerely yearn and the right time comes, it can happen in an instant. And once it happens, it's your experience. You will never forget it. You will never be able to, you know, get out of that experience and again get into depression, because that is how God's presence is when it concretizes from the omnipresence.
Absolutely. I'm sure almost all devotees would have experiences like this. And that presence is real. You know, sometimes when you have an experience like that, you probably cannot convey the thrill in words. The other person may or may not be able to understand what that really meant to you, but you know what it means. I'm sure a few years back we had done a satsang on God of small things, right? And that's what we saw. So many small incidences, so many small experiences where people feel that presence of Swami. And as I said, you know, that's the difference. It was not like before I came to Prashanthi Nilayam, Swami was not there, or now Swami is there. It is just that, you know, we are awakened to that presence. We are made aware to that presence. You know, a simple thing like, as somebody was saying, that we are not used to dealing with uncertainty. We are not used to dealing with something being, you know, we are not sure of it. We want sure outcomes for everything. You know, if there is a, we want certainty in everything. We want certainty in finances. We want certainty in career. But when we've come to Swami, we've come to understand that even uncertainty can have some pleasure. Uncertainty can have some thrill. And at the end of it, you can still see something positive. I think that's what Swami has done with all of us. On a completely different note, you know, when you feel that now Swami is not there, whom will I go to? I think that's a sense of a feeling that a lot of us were left with. You know, Swami, now whom do I go to? You know, had you been there, especially some of us have been spoiled in that sense, that if you had a problem, you could run to Swami and say, Swami, this is the problem, and you could get that solution from Swami. I recall one of our senior lecturers, and this happened, you know, not when Swami physically withdrew, but physically withdrew from him personally, because that's another experience that all of us would have. At one point, Swami would make himself available. At some point, he would just cut off. And you cannot do anything. If Swami chooses not to speak to you, you could be in Swami's room and Swami will ensure that he doesn't speak to you.
Sometimes I feel that is more painful than the current.
That's worse, right? And people don't get that, right? People think, oh, you're also lucky you're there. He said, you have no idea how much pain Swami can give physically if he's there around. As you know, one of the senior devotees was once saying, he tried to speak the driver of Swami's car into telling Swami that, you know, can you just inform Swami that I'm here and I'm here for this particular permission for some mandir or something like that. And the driver apparently pulled out one letter and he said, sir, if you can give this to Swami.
Oh, his own letter.
His own letter. He said, I'm sitting next to Swami, but I can't speak to Swami if Swami doesn't want me to. So this senior lecturer, you know, not a lecturer, the senior staff in the ashram, he was saying, there was a point when for every problem he could run to Swami, right? And somebody is troubling you in the office, you could run to Swami. A neighbor is troubling you, you could run to Swami. You have some health problem, you could run to Swami. But Swami's response would be, like, sometimes he would respond, sometimes he wouldn't respond. So he said that over the years, I had realized that if a problem was serious, Swami would respond. His mother was critically ill, Swami responded. His wife was having some problem in pregnancy, Swami responded. Some things were trivial. Some things would just get solved by themselves. And those were the things that Swami would not respond. So he said, Swami had trained my mind to think that if there is a problem that Swami is not responding to, then that problem is not worth worrying about. Because it is going to go by itself. So it came to a point when that physical availability of Swami was reducing, because Swami was getting busy, a lot of other staff members were being recruited. So it came to a point where if he had a problem, he could not go and tell Swami. And he realized that, which means Swami is telling me no more problems, none of the problems you're going to have henceforth need my attention. And he said that even in spite of all of that, as we are talking about, there were many, many other instances of, you know, the Vibhuti manifestation or somebody coming and giving the right message at the right time. He said that even now I can tell that if there is a serious problem, Swami comes. And if there's a problem which I am worrying too much about and I need not worry about, Swami doesn't respond and that problem gets solved by itself. And I think that is a lesson for all of us. And it is a mental block that we have, that Swami, today I'm not able to turn to you. Today I'm not able to ask you.
We'll take another quick little break, listeners, and after that we will come and conclude this session of beautiful satsang, remembering Swami's omnipresence concretizing into the presence.
मंदिर में राजा तिराजा
मन मंदिर में राजा तिराजा
मन मंदिर में राजा तिराजा
मन मंदिर में राजा तिराजा
तुम हो साईं महाराज नर्तन सुंदर
नटराजा
नर्तन सुंदर नटराजा शिवकाली प्रिय शिवराजा शिवकाली प्रिय शिवराजा
शिवकाली प्रिय शिवराजा
तुम हो साईं महाराज नर्तन सुंदर नटराजा शिवकाली प्रिय शिवराजा
शिवकाली प्रिय
ಕಾಲಿ ಪ್ರಿಯ ಶಿವರಾಜ मन मंदिर में राजाधिराजा
Welcome back, dear listeners. We will continue with our satsang where we were recounting some incidents where Bhagwan's omnipresence manifests into the presence. I'm reminded of an experience of one of my classmates, and I know this because I was personally involved through the entire journey. He had called me sometime towards the end of 2015, I think November or December 2015. I was thrilled at being blessed with a baby girl, and he called to congratulate me, and then he said, I also want to share that, you know, my wife is also along the family way, and I'm also going to be joining your club very soon. So we exchanged a lot of happy words, and it was wonderful. But then in the beginning of 2016, January or February, in fact, he also visited our home as well. You know, this brother, his name is Arun. He had come home with his wife, and after that, in 2016, January or February, he called me and he said, "This is a terrible thing. I have to take a decision." What happened? In the test, it had got revealed that the fetus is having what they call as the transposition of the great arteries. Now we have the pulmonary artery which carries deoxygenated blood from the heart to the lungs and brings it back to the heart.
Right.
I mean, it doesn't bring it back to the heart. It takes it from the heart to the lungs. That blood comes to the heart, and then that purified oxygenated blood is pumped via the aorta, which is another big artery, to the rest of the body. Now, so this is one kind of an eight loop from heart to the lungs, back to the heart, and from the heart to the body, back to the heart. Now, when the two arteries are interchanged, what happens is, instead of one continuous double loop, it becomes two separate loops. So there is blood being pumped from the heart to the lungs, back to the heart, back to the lungs, back to the heart. An oxygenated blood cycle. And there is one cycle of heart to the body, body to the heart, heart to the body. That's it. That instead of pure going and... So this is the problem with the fetus. So the doctors have said that as long as the child is inside the mother, because it's the mother who is respiring on behalf of the child, no problem. But once the child is delivered, it will require a lot of surgery. And the best case scenario is that you will have a retarded child. Worst case scenario is you will have a dead child. This was told to him, and he was advised that it's better that you drop the baby now, abort the baby. And he said, "No, what do I do? I..." And when he was asking me, what do I answer? I said, "I have no idea." I said, "You pray to Swami. Swami will give you your answer. Once Swami gives you the answer, you let me know. I will give you enough points to support that answer of Bhagwan. That's all. So if you say that Swami has told you to drop the baby, I'll tell you how it is. If you say Swami has told you to keep the baby, I'll tell you how it is. But that decision, it's only between you and Swami." After 1 week, he said that he's convinced Swami wants him to keep the baby, and that's what they decided. And he said that they went and took an appointment in the super speciality hospital in Bangalore. They felt this is Swami's hospital. And because he's again a Swami student, the doctor there who saw, the doctor said, "Keep your faith, we can do. As soon as the child is born, we'll rush the child for surgery." He said that it's a very difficult thing because when the child is born, it's so tender. Like, even if you do this surgery 1 month after the child is born, the child can have 1,000 times more strength to withstand this, rather than doing it immediately. But in this case, we have no option. You can imagine the arteries are so tiny in the baby, they'll be like cap. I mean, they'll be so thin. But this was the plan. Then it so happened that in case of certain complications, the Bangalore Super Speciality Hospital was not equipped to deal with that. they needed some latest equipment. They said it's better that you shift out somewhere. And at this point, you know, Arun felt a kind of low in his life, because he felt, what is this? I'm even not being able to be in Swami's hospital, because after Swami's physical departure, you look for signs of his omnipresence, and Swami's hospital is one. Now, interestingly, his wife, absolutely not devoted to Swami. In fact, she never bothered about Swami till this situation came, and Arun told her that, you know, Swami is our only refuge, he can help. And that is the mother's heart, you know. The mother, she said, I am ready to try anything. Let me try Swami also, I'll do it, if my baby is going to be safe. And as she prays, she's a non-devotee. I mean, in the normal sense. Swami comes to her in a dream and tells her, operation on 8th. Don't worry, I'll take care, and gives her blessing. And she's so reinforced. And Arun says that he noticed a sea change in his wife. She would get up and do Suprabhatam. She learned Swami's Ashtotram. She began to chant, and he's telling, at that point in time, I wondered whether I am the devotee or she is the devotee. But she would do everything. The delivery date had been given as June 10th. But she said that Swami has told me 8th is surgery. So they took, okay, let's see what it is. And as days passed, the baby was growing, and they had a plan in place now. As soon as the child is delivered, they'll take the child, rush to the hospital, Narayana Hridayalaya. Now, interestingly, when they were evicted from the Bangalore Super Speciality Hospital because of that problem, they were introduced to another Sai devotee doctor in Narayana Hridayalaya. And he said, I will take care, I will do my best, don't worry. So, it was a half an hour drive. The plan was, as soon as the child is born, you know, there is something called, I forget the medical term for it, but basically, within a few hours of the child being born, there is a gap between the chambers of the heart, which slowly starts sealing itself automatically, so that the baby can now respire and breathe on the heart, breathe on its own, and there's no mixing of good blood and bad blood. Now, they wanted to give a medicine for that baby such that that hole doesn't close up, so that the blood keeps mixing from the two circulations, because that is the only way to ensure oxygenated blood is reaching the body.
Right.
In the meanwhile, rush to the hospital and again retranspose the two arteries, cut and stitch them across. That was the plan. So even as the child was born, you know, they say that the amount of trauma and pain that the mother goes through while delivering the child is not imaginable for any man. But they say that the moment the mother holds the baby in her hands, there is a surge of, you know, scientifically speaking, surge of serotonin and those chemicals inside, which make you forget the pain that you went through to give birth. But otherwise, it's that love. That love heals all the pain. But in her case, she didn't even get to hold the baby. They said that the baby is going to turn blue, so they quickly gave the injection that will ensure that the hole is kept open, and they just rushed. She couldn't even hold. And, you know, she recollects that was the time she cried out and said, Swami, they are telling my child is a blue baby. But I believe that you are going to give me my baby, so I am going to name him Krish, after Krishna. Because Krishna was a blue baby, right? So the child was named even as he was born. They got to know it's a male, it's a boy. She didn't even see the child, because by the time she came out, the child was taken away. So she just said, she prayed to Swami and said, this is Krish, Swami, this is my Krishna. My Krishna has to be there. Now, in the meanwhile, when they go to the hospital, Arun is told that the child has the transposition of great arteries, TGA as they say. But it's not a simple TGA, it's a complex TGA. Now, that landed as another thud on Arun. He said, what's a complex TGA? He said, apart from that, there's another complication which was not detected in the earlier thing when they did the scan. He was like, oh God, this is the lowest point. Now, at this point in time, my wife is weak, I'm alone here, what is this? The next sentence from the doctor really, you know, it really shocked him, because the doctor said, so therefore, you can take your baby home now. Shall we do the surgery after a month or so? He's like, you're not doing the surgery now? No. Why? No, I said, no, it's a complex TGA, which means the baby has a hole in the heart, which means that between the two blood chambers, there's already a naturally existing hole, which is mixing the blood. In normal babies, this is a problem. That hole has to be closed. But in your baby, because there are two separate loops, this mixing is helping the baby to get some oxygen. Usually 100% oxygenation has to happen. This child is getting up to 60% oxygenation, which is good enough till about a month or so. Then you will start noticing when the baby starts coughing or starts turning slightly blue, you get, we will do the surgery at that time. So Arun was grateful for that problem. You know, that problem that came, he never knew that that problem or a complication could actually be the lifesaver, because the baby was not operated on day one. They took back the baby home. The baby grew well. And after about 1.5 months or something, they noticed one day that the baby was turning bluish. They rushed it to the hospital. The doctor said, you know what? Your child is now perfectly ready for the surgery to transpose the great arteries.
Mm-hmm.
Strong, body-wise it's strong. And why it is turning blue is, it happens in some cases where this hole in the heart seals by itself. There are two kinds of holes in the heart. One which seals by itself, one which needs external intervention to seal.
Mm-hmm.
The kind of hole in the heart your baby is having is self-sealing, and that hole is sealing. So now we will do. The surgery was done, and on Guru Purnima day that year, 2016, July, the surgery was done. The child is still there now, 4-year-old boy, bonny boy. And, you know, Arun and Arun's wife, they are a fully, you know, transformed devotees. I told Arun that this experience, you share it with anybody because it shows, share it with anybody and everybody because it shows that when the most difficult situation comes, when you think that you're cursed, you're in a horrible situation, worst possible thing could have happened. With Swami, that is not the worst possible thing. That is the best possible thing. Because Arun himself was saying, I never thought I will express my gratitude to Swami for giving a hole in the heart to my child. But I am doing that now because I realize it is all for the supreme good. So, difficulties and misfortunes when they come in our life, at that point in time, they look like the worst thing that can possibly happen. But with God's wisdom, everything is for the best. And I think our duty is just to keep that faith firm and do everything that we need to do to keep that faith firm. And that is where Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam, all that come into effect.
Right. And as we've been telling from the beginning of this satsang, I think that's the lesson for all of us. It's only to remember that He is always only a call away. And as some of the experiences that we narrated, it is not that He is just waiting for the call also. Right. And whenever I narrate the episode of Gajendra Moksham, this is what I think. The way it is described is very, very beautiful and very dramatic. That Gajendra calls and Lord Vishnu is actually playing chess with Mother Lakshmi. And he says, dear elephant, I'm coming to save you. And he runs. And he runs even without his upper cloth. He doesn't ask for Sudarshan Chakra. He doesn't call Garuda. And the story goes that they all follow him and eventually he comes rushing. And like, and they say that that's how God comes rushing when a devotee calls. The anticlimax of the whole thing is the struggle between Gajendra and the crocodile lasts for a few thousand years, is what the Bhagavatam says. And then, you know, you wonder, I mean, is God like that? He says that, you know, I'm not bothered about your struggling and all that. Only when you call me, I'll come rushing like that. I mean, that's not the Swami that we know. You know, Swami is not somebody who is waiting for, no, you didn't call me, so I didn't come. That's not Swami's response. But it's just that it takes preparation for that call. It takes preparation for you to be in that place where, you know, you deserve probably that. There are hundreds and thousands of people, and Swami would say that, you know, God is not responsible for any of that. You do karma and everything, whatever you do is a response of that karma. Everything is only an unseen consequence of whatever you have done. But to have Swami's presence, I know it's not that devotees do not suffer, it's not that devotees do not undergo pain, but to have that presence of Swami in your life, I think for that we need preparation. We need to, you know, Gajendra took 1,000 years for that one call. And I think that's what it takes. How many of our calls that we do every day is so that one day when we call, we will feel Swami's presence. It is not that Swami is not there. We will feel Swami's presence when we call.
And Gajendra is so typical of any one of us. First he uses, he's the king of elephants.
Right.
First he uses his might. Then he calls out to all his friends. See, this is how we respond to any situation in our life. Because we think we are capable. That's our ego. The moment anything comes, I try to use my own strength. I try to use my influence. I try to use everything. And then we realize that, oh my God, no, I just had to, instead of making God the last resort, can we make him the first resort? I think that can be a good thought to mull upon during this Aradhana day. On that note, dear listeners, we conclude this, if I can say, spontaneous, extemporaneous kind of satsang, which we thought would be good for everyone, especially us, because we too require this kind of a booster for our own selves. As the Aradhana day comes, may we use that day to rededicate ourselves for our own good. Let us think more about Swami. Let us speak more about Swami. Let us listen to more about Swami. Let our love for Swami keep growing every passing day. Thank you. Jai Sai Ram.
दिए की जरा सी ला तो चमके।